Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode number 146. Hal, holy cow. Some exciting news, theoretically exciting news. Gary Gensler was sued by 18 states and possibly has resigned at this point, not officially, but it sure looks like the way he's talking, it's going to happen. And that could be kind of the best Christmas present or early Christmas present that I think anybody in crypto has ever heard of.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke on the Gary Gensler being out. You know, there's probably some fire there.
Yeah, so I was reading a little bit into it, and they talked about that these states are suing him because they are infringing on the state's rights to regulate crypto, the crypto industry, and that the SEC is violating federalism and the separation of powers. And I mean, it makes sense. I like that argument.
it may be a bit of a stretch in my mind to do that, but like, at least you're getting something in front of him that's like another angle to be like, hey man, get out of here. you don't want to be here when the new regime comes in, because you're going to, you and Elizabeth Warren are the only two left, and now the states are pushing back as well. So I think that it's just a good message to send that's like, hey, you should probably move on.
Yeah, and I think he would probably much rather resign on his own than be forced out January 20th.
Yeah, I mean, it's just time. I mean, if he can't feel it, then he's a robot. Like, everybody's against him. And he's been losing. We talked about it for the last 18 months. He just loses case after case after case. So what are we doing here? Why would you want to stick around? Like, it's time to move on and time to get out, and let's get somebody else in there.
Well, and I think that's what these 18 states have been saying is, quit going after exchanges. Let us do that if we believe there's an issue. And that's kind of all he's doing right now, is going after the largest exchanges in the world that are based in the U.S. and saying that their digital assets are securities, where everybody else says, no, their assets are their assets. They're not securities.
Yeah. Well, Hester Peirce came out and said that the Gary Gensler regime has left SEC in a position that's basically, they have to do a ton of work in order to regulate crypto, because they haven't really got started. All they've been doing is shooting holes in the wall every time they think something's a security and they go after it. So I think the SEC may have to change their in-office rules so that employees have to come into the office more than twice every pay period. Like, they might actually have to do some work instead of sitting home all day.
There was talk about the old CFTC chair that took over for Gary when he left CFTC running the SEC again. And the guy was like, I've already had to clean up after Gary once. I do not want to do that again.
I mean, we talked about it. It's like a sloppy way to handle this. Like, don't make any regulations and then just sue people for breaking your rules that you're not clear about the rules anyway. It's gross. So like, it's just time. It's time to move on. Like, yeah, you know, when the culture of government supports you and is on your team as far as being anti-crypto, then I can see how it makes sense to do this. But when, I mean, they're going to snap their fingers on January 20th and the culture changes. And I don't think you want to be one of the last people that's still fighting against crypto in dumb ways when everybody else is pro-Bitcoin or pro-crypto.
Yeah. I mean, especially, so there was some other news that came out from Pennsylvania. Their House of Representatives created a bill to move to form a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And right now, I think they have a $7 billion strategic reserve, and they want to reserve 10% of that to buy Bitcoin, which is huge. I mean, we've been talking about all these other states and their pensions and stuff like that in that 1% to 5%. And this is the first one that I've heard that said, no, let's do at least 10%. Right. So, I mean, things are changing, right? The winds are blowing in the right direction. And that's amazing news to hear, too.
No, I mean, I am as bullish as I can be. Like, I say this every week, I think, and it just like cranks up even more. I feel like the meme where, like, I think it's the WWE guy, and he's like progressively getting more explosive. And it's like, just when you think you can't do it, like you just have lasers shooting out of your eyes and you're on fire. It's like, I feel like I'm getting there. I feel like one of like the crazy people that I couldn't listen to when I first got into Bitcoin, because they're like way too bullish and it didn't make sense to me. And how could you think you could get to $1 million per Bitcoin? Like, it's just, that's outrageous. And now it's like, man, you start putting in, okay, Pennsylvania is talking about 10%. Okay, well, game theory says there's 49 other states in Puerto Rico have to do the same thing. Yes, Pennsylvania is going to be one of the top 15 states probably on a, from a reserve standpoint, but California's got to be thinking about it. There's, that's a huge one. Texas, you know, you're just talking about the game theory on the state side. Well, they got the game theory on the country side, and you're talking about, you know, Trump telegraphing that he's going to do a strategic Bitcoin stockpile or reserve that's going to start with at least 200,000 Bitcoin with, you know, potential to go up to 1 million based on the Cynthia Lummis bill. That's, you know, even if Bitcoin's at 300,000 on average when he buy, when the US buys all that, that's $300 billion. That for the United States, that's not a lot. That doesn't, you know, so it's super reasonable to do this. That forces every country to make a decision on whether or not they're in. And that's the country stuff. Like, in my mind, that stuff's supposed to happen in 2030, 2035. Like, it's supposed to be so far away. You know, corporations haven't even been able to move in, and financial institutions haven't been able to move in yet. You know, today is day one on options trading in IBIT, and then tomorrow I think it opens up for the rest of the spot Bitcoin ETFs. That allows institutions to start evaluating how to hedge and use the option strategies in order to get Bitcoin exposure. And I just don't see how they can like come in. All of this is happening at once, right? Like, it's really not supposed to be like this. It was really supposed to be retail and then institutions and then corporations and then countries. And now it's like, no, we're just all going to cram in the door at once. And that makes me super bullish about price. And I can see where this thing runs away really fast in just the next 12, 18 months. And you know, I feel like these clowns from last bull cycle that talked about the super cycle and escape velocity, and we're going to break the cycles and all this stuff. I'm like, man, if we have buyers at these levels, I don't see where we go into cycles anymore. Like, these people don't care about cycles. These, you know, it's not an emotional purchase. And so I'm like, I'm off the charts, man. I mean, I could talk about Bitcoin all day.
Well, I mean, you talk about the options trading, which we've been waiting for that to happen. And that really just creates more liquidity in the market. All right. I mean, it's definitely a good thing. But if you look at what's happening in the ETFs right now, the records are insane, right? I mean, there was, what, 4.7 billion of inflows in like the last 6 days. Bitcoin now is the seventh largest asset in the world. And the majority of all the demand for Bitcoin is coming out of the ETFs right now, right? So it's not from retail buying Bitcoin right now. It's from the ETFs. And that means there's larger institutions, you would think, that are kind of getting involved on this. And shoot, BlackRock now hit $40 billion assets of Bitcoin assets, right? So, and that just came 2 weeks after they hit $30 billion. So it's kind of exponential for them right now. And that's that, they did that in 211 days, right? Which is insane compared to the last time that someone hit $40 billion in assets in an ETF, it took 1,202 days. So you did it in a huge multiple faster than that. And now you look at the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, it's bigger than any of the last 2,800 ETFs that have been launched in the last 10 years. And it's only 10 months old. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, you know, we've discussed that institutions, it take 6, 9, 12 months in order to validate a new ETF for investment. And so the timing of those is kind of right on time with these options launching, because when they're just ready to start getting into the Bitcoin ETFs, now it makes it way easier for them to get into the Bitcoin ETFs, because they can play hedge games and all of their option trading games, so that they're generating income without having all the risk, and they can play the games that they are used to playing with Bitcoin as the underlying asset. So, you know, the derivatives markets are huge compared to the underlying in general. So for me, I think it's opens up more pools of liquidity. It just brings more money into Bitcoin. I think you will have more money coming in that doesn't go directly into buying Bitcoin. But even if you're playing the hedging games, when if you're buying the ETF and then shorting in the options game, you're still forcing IBIT or the ETF to buy spot Bitcoin. So it's still Bitcoin coming off exchanges, and it is not in the ethos of Bitcoin where it's self custody or die, you know. But we all know that that was going to happen, and that this is part of reality. So in order for Bitcoin to do everything it's going to do, it needs to be fully accepted in on Wall Street, and this is just part of it. So, you know, you've got this, you have Bitcoin options in the spot ETF at the same time that MicroStrategy is running wild with their $42 billion play. They did another 51,780 Bitcoin. They deployed $4.6 billion, bring their total up to 331,000 Bitcoin at an average price of 50,000. So they're going nuts. And then so they announced that one day, 2 days later, they're like, yeah, and we got a $1.75 billion convertible note coming out that could be up to $2 billion at 0% so that we can go buy more Bitcoin. Their stock price is going nuts, right? Fixed income is getting real exposure to Bitcoin. And like every fixed income, not every, over 70% of all pensions are underfunded. So they're starving for ways to catch up, and getting this upside through these convertible notes is brilliant. Because I mean, they're shorting things too, right? They're generating income and cutting their downside and playing all the games that hedge funds play as well. So, you know, it's a bigger deal than I think people understand. I've been started listening to these MicroStrategy guys, and they go in depth. And it's super fascinating on what MicroStrategy is doing under the hood, but people are just now starting to copy them. Like Marathon just announced that they're going to do a $700 million convertible note. And that's the first company that I recall creating a corporate bond in order to generate revenue so that they can go buy Bitcoin. So you've got Marathon following, and then Similar Scientific. There's an AI company called the Genius Group that bought 10 million, which isn't a lot, but if they're small, then it is what it is. Metaplanet, the Japanese company, is still buying. I think they bought again today. A company called Solidon is converting 60% of all their profit into Bitcoin. So you've got some followers now, and some of them are actually implementing some of the next level strategies that MicroStrategy's figured out over the last 4 years. Originally they were just getting debt, like going to the bank to get a loan in order to buy Bitcoin. And they've flushed all of that out because these equity plays and these convertible notes are way more accretive. And, you know, they've created a whole new stock metric called, you know, the Bitcoin yield, where your stocks, the value of one share of their company in Bitcoin goes up. So even if, no matter what they do, they're trying to pump more Bitcoin per share. And so if you like Bitcoin, that's, you know, that's an attractive thing. So, you know, they're just inventing everything as they go, and it makes sense. And, you know, in a few years, you're not gonna be able to do all this stuff because it's gonna become really crowded. So the value is pumping into MicroStrategy. Their stock price is like probably breaking 400 right now. It's pretty wild. And that's, you know, they did a 1 to 10 reverse split. So it's 4,000 in old MicroStrategy numbers. So they might have to reverse split again because options are so freaking expensive to, you know, because anytime you buy an call, it's 100 shares. Well, at $400, you're talking about $40,000 on a trade minimum. So, you know, the premiums get pretty expensive and it locks some people out from the options game. So I wouldn't be surprised if they reverse split again in order to get more people pumping money through the options. It's wild what Michael Saylor's figured out, but it's Bitcoin in a nutshell, man. You get in early and you figure stuff out before everybody else, and then you get to collect the gains.
Yeah, I saw that the average return for these convertible notes for them is at 90%.
Yeah,
which is figure that out. Insane.
Figure out if you're a pensioner, if you're running a pension fund or an insurance fund, and you're locked out of buying equities and getting and buying ETFs and buying anything that can actually move. But there's this one company that you can buy convertible notes and get 90% gains. Even if you did 2 or 3% of your fund into this, you're able to catch up. You know, you're able to get the yield you need in order to fully fund your fixed income fund. This is crazy what he's able to figure out. And every time they do a convertible note, it's overfunded. Like, more people want it than they're able to provide. So at this rate, he's going to hit his $42 billion in under 12 months.
Yeah. Does that mean he's going to bump it up to like $120 million?
Man, no rules, man. There are no rules for what he can and can't do. As long as they will keep giving him money, he'll keep buying Bitcoin. Like, I don't know how they, I'm sure that there's a calculation that they can do that is, you know, debt to assets or debt to income or whatever. But you know how these banks are, man. If whatever you're doing is working, they'll throw those metrics out and keep pumping money into you. So this might just never end for him.
When I look at some of my holdings in my IRA, the MicroStrategy stock, and I bought some of the leverage stock too, just keeps becoming bigger and bigger than everything else. It's like, what in the heck is going on? I mean, it's awesome to watch, but it's almost now I'm like, well, why didn't I buy more of this? Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah, I mean, there's starting to be a little bit of a friction between like Bitcoin people and MicroStrategy people. To me, you know, pulling for MicroStrategy is just kind of a fun side gig that you get when you're into Bitcoin. Like, mm-hmm. when you get into Bitcoin and you realize that the games that everybody plays in fiat and inflation and printing money, the freaking banking rules, like the whole Ponzi scheme of banking on the printed dollar is just all nonsense. And MicroStrategy figured out a way to use all of that against them to buy Bitcoin. Like, how can you not pull for that if you're pro Bitcoin? It's like hacking the system and creating a money printer for your company. And the only thing he does is buy Bitcoin. Like, it's exactly what I would do if I could do what he's doing.
Yeah.
why would you be against this guy?
And I mean, the $4.6 billion he bought with, I mean, he paid $8,500 per Bitcoin. So it's not like this incredible deal that he was able to find a way to get it from somebody else for cheap. I mean, he's paying spot prices at the time. Right? So it's exciting to see if you're going to spend $4.5 billion at those prices, you're expecting it to continue to go up. And just another one of those, okay, aha moments that we're not done yet. We got a long ways to go.
No, and not only that, you know, so what has he spent? He's last week, he bought 27,000 Bitcoin at $74,000 a Bitcoin. And this week he bought it, deployed $4.6 billion. So, you know that he's got $38 billion left to deploy. Like, yeah. You should feel comfortable buying at $88,000, $90,000 of Bitcoin. You think you're late. He's telling you you're not late. You and I are like, yeah, there's more money behind the $42 billion. He's going to keep going. But like, even if you're just, even if you aren't into Bitcoin and you don't understand it, you haven't spent any time and you don't get how the mining works and the difficulty adjustment and all the crazy stuff that it, you know, takes a while to learn. If you just look at this and you say, okay, the president of the United States says we're going to hold Bitcoin. There's companies out there buying billions of dollars of Bitcoin at spot prices. Other countries are talking about it. The Polish presidential candidate said he's going to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve. You've got states, countries, companies, financial institutions, BlackRock. I mean, you don't have to do the research anymore. You just have to be like, you know what? These guys are probably right. Like, it's not just the nerdy, weirdo, libertarian types anymore. It's basically everybody. So instead of learning about it, I'm just going to buy some. Like, it's such a safe move now. I don't understand how people are not paying attention.
I'm not sure if you saw. So, I mean, the strategic reserve for the U.S. that Loomis has put up was saying, buy 1 million Bitcoin, right? Which is great. Saylor is a huge fan of that, but he's like, the Trump max move is going to be to buy 4 million Bitcoin.
Well, that's more in line with what RFK Jr. said at the Bitcoin conference if he were to be elected president.
Yeah.
So, while we're talking about reserves, Bitcoin as a store of value, right? Store of value comes before medium of exchange. Reserves are a brilliant way to use Bitcoin because all reserves do is sit there and increase in value. That's all you want them to do. You're not trying to trade them. You're not trying to do 1,000 transactions a second. You just want your gold, your US treasuries, and your Bitcoin to not lose value. So eventually, maybe you have to cash it in because you want to do something with it, or you had a problem and you're over budget somewhere and you need to get some liquidity. That's freaking perfect for Bitcoin. Let it sit there. If it sits there for 4 years, the worst 4 year CAGR is 24% in the history of Bitcoin. So if you have reserves and all reserves do is sit there, you sit there for 4 years, you're eliminating the risk and you're only capturing the value from the volatility. If you're in for 6 months, you're converting the volatility into risk. You may lose money. If you're in for 4 years, it's just volatility. It's not risk. You're up, you know, current 4 year CAGR is 50%. So you're talking about buy this stuff and just wait 4 years. It's the same thing that they were saying in 2017, but now it's got, you know, a lot more data behind it and another 7 years to really understand it. But you're talking about a great way, especially, you know, these companies talk about how much cash they're sitting on. Like Apple's got whatever billions of dollars in cash in reserves. Like, that's dumb. You're losing value by sitting on the cash. It would make more sense if you had US treasuries, but it would make even more sense if you had 10% Bitcoin and 90% anything else. So to me, it fits so well as a reserve asset because you're just going to let your reserve assets sit until you need them. And as long as they sit for 4 years, you're good. And honestly, the way things are going right now, you know, you're going to be in a good spot in less than 4 years because you just have all of this adoption from major players and major institutions. So, yeah, that to me, this is a great time to get in if you're a nation state or a state, because so much of the risk is gone.
Well, I think Saylor's thought was that buying 4 million Bitcoin for the U.S. reserve would create $81 trillion in a windfall, right? And when you have close to $36 trillion in debt right now, that would be super helpful. But the other big thing that I was reading about is this whole concept of the 60-40 stocks and bonds split that everybody's done.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about, well, what if you did 60-40 stocks to Bitcoin? Everything that it shows is way outperforming anything that a bond has kind of ever done. So it might be kind of a new thing that starts to happen, right? As people get out of the whole bond concept and get into Bitcoin as a bond replacement almost.
I mean, with Bitcoin, even if you did 60-30-10 and you kept your bonds because you just like bonds because you have a bad habit, great. Yeah. Like, if you don't add any Bitcoin to a portfolio, you know, at some point, you're violating your fiduciary responsibility. I don't understand how, like, these fiduciaries are getting away with, like, avoiding Bitcoin still. At some point, the clients are going to be like, why haven't we gotten Bitcoin exposure? I've been hearing about this for a decade. We have none. I bought a little bit on the side, and my nephew did too. And it's crushing your performance. So what, you know, at a certain point, you got to pay attention to it. And you don't have to when it's just retail people buying on Coinbase, but you do have to when other institutions are buying, when corporations are buying, when countries are putting it on there as a reserve asset. At that point, I think you do have a fiduciary responsibility to investigate it and figure it out. And I mean, Microsoft is at least talking about investigating if it's a reasonable thing to put on the balance sheet. So if Microsoft's talking about it, you can talk about it too. It's okay. For me, it's past time for like the real early adopters. Like we're sliding into that early majority piece. So once they unlock that, then, you know, we're off to the races. You know, I used to be like, okay, this cycle, like three times the previous high, you know, we'll be in the $200,000 range and da, 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 da. And I'm like, God, that seems bearish, man. It seems low. Like, it's not that hard to go from 90 to 210. Like that's a little over a double. It's not, it doesn't require that much money coming in. And if they really do try to cram all this money through the door between January and March, then the price has to shoot up because people aren't going to be able to move it from their cold storage onto exchanges fast enough to keep up with the price, with the buy pressure. So I could see the price just going nuts. Like, I don't know how you could predict the price in this coming year in a range. It's like something between 200 and 2 million, like 200,000 and 2 million, somewhere in that range. Because like, if things go, like, honestly, I have a feeling like the chances of like alien invasions or like nuclear war have gone up dramatically because things look so good for me.
Well, and it's not just Bitcoin, right? I mean, shoot, you look at Ethereum, the ETFs, they're finally net positive after, what was it, like $3.2 billion in outflows from Grayscale. So they had 6 days straight in a row of inflows, which was close to $800 million, which is not nearly the amount as Bitcoin's had, but they're a lot smaller. I think the last 3 days they had were the three largest they've ever had since launch. So it's great to see that there is some diversification happening out there, right? And Ethereum is still alive. And I mean, shoot, if you look at some of the other tokens now too, with everything going on with this whole Gary Gensler thing, they're going crazy right now. I mean, Cardano doubled, Ripple went over $1.20, I think at one point, Stellar went 120% in a week. So all these,
Solana was in the like 220, 240 range when I looked at it. Like, you know, I feel like 250 is high for Solana. I don't remember where it got to, you know, as a peak, but it, you know, we're you know, it's doing really well.
Yeah, it's close to its peak too. Yeah, so it's, everything has been going up and to the right. And I think, what was it, if you look at some of the companies like VanEck and stuff like that, they did a bunch of new ETNs in Europe. So they've been really busy in Europe, and ETNs are kind of like an ETF, just a, I guess maybe a little bit more risky, but they did Pyth last week, which probably not many people know about. They did Sui this week. They added Solana staking to their current ETN, right? So there's just a ton of things happening. And I think somebody, Canary or something like that, even did HBAR. Right. So I know most people probably haven't even heard of Hedera, but another random one that I like, and I think they're great. But yeah, it's awesome to see that everybody's starting to open the doors to getting more access. And I think Bitwise had that top 10 cryptocurrency, kind of like we had talked about a long time ago, yep. That we'll start to get a lot more interest from people as they want to get access to all of crypto and not just Bitcoin. And I know Bitcoin's the best, but I had a conversation with my mother-in-law. She's like, do you own Bitcoin or crypto? It's like, oh, Jesus, you don't listen to a thing that I say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm big into Bitcoin. I think you can just count on it. And it feels not risky in the grand scheme of things, which is probably a strange thing for non-Bitcoin investors to hear about if you haven't done any research. But yeah, I mean, I feel like the other crypto stuff, if you look at like the Bitcoin dominance, it's still going up, but there's enough money coming out and going into altcoins to really pump them, because it just doesn't take that much money in order to bump those prices, because the market caps are a lot smaller. So I think it's kind of the normal thing that you just have a lot of old school Bitcoin holders that have got a lot of profits that are like, okay, I'll take a little bit out and start playing in these altcoins like they used to do in the previous cycles. But, you know, I think you got a lot of guys like me in the institutions and the states and the governments, and they're not going to dabble in anything. They're just buying Bitcoin. So I think it may be a little short-sighted to jump into altcoins, but at the same time, people like to play with this stuff. I mean, it's, you know, buying Bitcoin and holding it and not paying attention is really not in the ethos of some of these kind of techie nerd types. They want to play with it.
Well, I agree. I think Bitcoin is the safest of all the cryptocurrencies out there, right? They're also at least 6 to 10 years ahead of almost everything else out there, minus maybe Ethereum and a couple of other ones, right? So there are advantages to being in Bitcoin. I think one of the great part about crypto is if you like a certain project and what they're doing, you can kind of get in as an early access VC type way and getting in on these tokens. And if they take off, great. If they don't take off, that's fine too, right? But there are some other use cases. I don't think the entire world is going to run on Bitcoin only. I don't think it should. I think Bitcoin should be that reserve asset commodity type of product, and all these, the running a country or doing everything that we're going to be doing with all these transactions can be done on other chains as well, as long as they tie back into Bitcoin at some one way or the other, right?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about it a lot. Like, there, you probably shouldn't use sats in gaming, right? You can come up with your own token and do in-game tokens, and those tokens can be valued based on the exchange, you know, whatever it is on the exchange. So more successful games will have more successful tokens that'll have more value, and that's probably not a good use for Bitcoin. So, you know, I agree. There's plenty of use cases out there. And you're right. I mean, it's like you're effectively buying, I mean, Gary Gensler would say you're effectively buying securities for that organization. And if they succeed, then the value of those tokens goes up, assuming that their issuance rate and things like that don't dilute you faster than the business is gaining value. So yeah, I think there's a place for all this stuff, but it is way harder to pick winners in the gigantic sea of altcoins and all that. It just takes the amount of time it takes. I stopped doing it because I'd rather listen to some Bitcoin stuff and get stuff done around the house than research altcoins and try to figure out which one's going to win.
Oh yeah. I mean, especially like with meme coins, right? I mean, I think it's like 1,000 new meme coins are coming out every minute, something insane. Like, so
yeah,
for somebody to actually be on top of that and understand it, I mean, it's like picking a needle out of a haystack, right? And if you can do it, great. If you figure out a way, that's fantastic. But for most people,
you got jobs and kids
not feasible. Yeah.
That's tough to do. Yeah.
The majority of what you should be doing is pretty much Bitcoin, and then you can expand from there later on.
Yeah.
So I know we're talking a lot about some really good news. There was some, I don't want to say maybe disappointing stuff that I did read about. We knew Elizabeth Warren did win her Senate seat, and it sounds like she's going to now become the senior Democrat on the Senate Banking Committee, replacing Sherrod Brown. I mean, what's interesting, and Sherrod Brown really didn't allow any significant debate on digital assets legislation while he was the head of the Senate Banking Committee. So he's gone, which is good. Warren isn't really a step up from that, right? So she was a little looser in her talk about crypto when she was talking to John Deaton, but we'll see if that actually stands or if she kind of goes back to her old ways.
Yeah, and then, but there's also, she's in the minority. So the senior position in the minority party still doesn't have all that much power. So I'm not worried about it as much. She is a pretty crafty politician. She definitely got the message when John Deaton went over 40% against her. And I don't think she's seen any competition in Massachusetts, but she did see a lot of her anti-crypto compadres lose. And so I think she became popular but in the Occupy Wall Street movement. And now she's like the most pro-banking senator. So she can pivot. So I bet she slides into a more reasonable position on crypto. And if she wants to fight it, then she gets to fight it. But it doesn't seem like a political, like a strategy to win politically and keep your office. So I'd be curious. I am curious to see if she changes her tune now that basically all of government is going to be pro Bitcoin or pro crypto. Is she going to be the lone wolf that's saying it's all garbage, or is she going to slide into, we need reasonable regulations to protect the consumer, which is kind of where she slid when the John Deaton debates. And instead of saying we need to shut it down and having predetermined questions and answers with Jamie Dimon, she was talking way more reasonably about, we just need, you know, regulations that make sense, and they need to play by the same rules as everyone else. So her tune is changing, and she may just do the political thing where she just completely ignores the things she said in the past.
Yeah, I guess what she says and what she does will determine what really happens. Usually those don't align very closely.
That's right.
The other thing that I did see too, kind of this, no surprise with the current administration's war on crypto, is the FBI raided the Polymarket CEO's home.
Yeah.
So they took his phone and his other electronic devices. They did not charge him with anything, but they are investigating Polymarket for allegedly letting US users access the site, which, I mean, almost anybody theoretically could do with a VPN. So that's happened around the world with everybody, and we'll see what actually comes out of this. So Polymarket has said they haven't really done anything wrong, but who knows what this administration will try to do, since they lost and they're not happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, this administration definitely has the mentality of, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. If they don't like it, and they'll figure out a way to charge him with something. And so, yeah, they got his phone. I think he tweeted, new phone, who dis?
Yeah, I saw that.
As soon as he got a new phone. So I think that's funny. If the FBI raided my home and took my stuff, I might be a little more quiet about it. But, you know, these guys, if you're in the right, or you feel like you're in the right, and I mean, the FBI storming your house and taking your phone, is that's a pretty big step. So, I mean, I guess if you're in trouble, you might as well poke fun at them. But yeah, I mean, we'll see where it goes. Polymarket definitely went 50 for 50 on predicting what states would go in which direction in this election. And so the polls are now fully obsolete, and the system really likes the polls. So the system is going to go after the new guy. You know, that's just kind of the nature of how politics works.
Well, and it's not so much Polymarket, it's just the people, right? I mean, Polymarket's just enabling people's perspective on it and moving the odds based on where people are putting their money. So it's interesting to know that ask the people and you'll actually get the right answers, instead of whatever fake numbers get thrown up there that are random polls that mean nothing.
Well, in the polls, they ask the same questions, and then they just adjust on the back end in order to, you know, account for the biases, because there's always like a 60% response from Democrats and like a 30% response from Republicans and a 10% response from independents. And they just, you know, adjust the algorithm. They don't change their questions and things like that. I mean, I think we talked about the French whale that did his own polling, spent like $80,000 to go and get a poll done and ask, is your neighbor going to vote for Trump? So that they could get a better, clearer picture on, you know, are people going to vote for Trump? They just don't want to say it. And I think stuff like that is things that Polymarket and you know, the crowdsourcing of intelligence gets you, that go into the same institutions that run the same questions, that run the same polls, that will never get you. So, you know, it's just a disruptor, and the incumbents hate the disruptors. So they fight them. I mean, BGA did it with LIV Golf. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. It happens to corporations. It happens to individuals. Like, they don't like being disrupted. And so they steal your phone.
Yeah, BGA is still doing that with LIV Golf.
Yeah.
So he talked about one of the Polish presidential candidates coming out and talking very positively about Bitcoin and creating a strategic reserve. It almost sounds like Australia, who theoretically is one of the larger countries out there, is going the opposite way. So one of the Reserve Bank of Australia governors recently came out and delivered, I think, a pretty blunt critique of crypto, pretty much saying that digital assets like Bitcoin had no role in Australia's economy. And I think he said it was like, it's not currency, it's not money, it's being used as some sort of asset class. I don't really see a role for it in the Australian economy or payment system. And it's like, huh, well, the rest of the world has a different opinion. So you're going to about be left behind if that's the direction that you go. And Bhutan is going to be a more important country than Australia here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for that guy, there's a scoreboard that tells him whether he's right or wrong. And right now he's wrong to the tune of $92,000 per Bitcoin. And as it goes to 100 and 120, 150, he just gets wronger and wronger. So he can actually watch how wrong he is. Like, you know, if you don't do the research, Bitcoin doesn't make sense and it's easy to dismiss.
Yeah. This isn't completely related to crypto, but I did see something that I thought was pretty exciting because I think it will start to become a little bit, I'm sure it'll turn into some sort of crypto project. Did you see the British Telecom's AI grandma they created to help fight against scammers?
No, I did not see that.
British Telecom, I want to say they have like 24 million customers or whatever, but they have this AI grandma that they call Daisy, and it can keep scammers on the phone. I think it's kept them on the phone for up to 40 minutes, and just they keep talking and the scammers kind of go nuts. But they said like 22% of the Brits are facing weekly fraud attempts, and this is helping with some of that. And I think they're getting a better job of being able to understand what is likely a spam and a scammer and then sending it to this. And it kind of uses a chat GPT like interface to take what they're saying, turn it into text, and then turn it back into voice and have this grandma kind of run through a whole conversation. And I just feel like this is going to be something that the crypto industry is going to turn around as well and start adapting for everybody that calls and says, hey, I need your key phrase.
So, I like it because I certainly get multiple calls per day from numbers that I don't know what they are, and they never leave a voicemail and it's just scammy. I would love to have be able to like turn to an app to answer that call and just let it roll for 45 minutes and kill their time. Because, you know, it's a numbers game for them. The more people they call, the better likelihood that they find somebody that they can scam. So if you can tie them up for 40 minutes, that would help out just from the overall numbers of people being scammed.
I know we haven't really talked about WorldCoin in a while, and partly because they rebranded their name to World Network, not WorldCoin. But there is a new competitor to them, and it's a digital identity platform that they're calling themselves Y. So I guess X was taken already, so now they went to Y. And I think the benefit, we've talked about World Network doing these scanning your iris that no one really likes. And instead of doing a biometric data perspective, Y is going to look at all the traces you leave behind while using the internet to verify that you're human. And then according to their planning document, it's going to address privacy risk and minimize fraud, which should be interesting. And they want to almost create like a crypto super app, right, that really allows users to privately build and earn from their digital identity. So kind of exciting to see. I think it's still in the very early phases, but I like the sounds of this. And I think a couple of the guys that did the Lido project, which is staking of Ethereum, liquid staking of Ethereum. So they're the ones that are kind of backing this. So I'll be intrigued to see where this goes and if it becomes something that everybody else picks up on or where it goes from here.
Yeah, you know, I will keep an eye on it by listening to what you tell me about it every week.
We haven't talked much about NFTs in a while, but there's still stuff going on. McDonald's just announced a partnership with Doodles, which is a big NFT project. And you're going to be able to see these custom coffee cups that customers can unlock digital collectibles and content on. And then I think also access some co-branded physical merchandise too. So cool to see that NFTs aren't dead yet as much as everybody wants to think they are. And you still have super large corporations looking at how to leverage NFTs to increase their customer base and interactions with their customers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like NFTs are neat enough. Digital collectibles, you know, people have always been about collectibles, you know, and like people collect McDonald's toys, you know, like vintage McDonald's toys. And so there is kind of a relationship there that I think makes sense. And so if meme coins and things like that are going to make a comeback, I would assume NFTs will make a comeback as well. I do feel like it's closer to Beanie Babies and it's more like valuable to the person that bought it, but the resale value is probably not going to be there. So, you know, I can dig it. If they can find a cool way to do it as a reward-based system, you know, that's linked to your app, because like every freaking fast food restaurant requires you to use an app now. So if you could, you know, you could throw NFTs in there and that'd be kind of a neat thing for some people that I think people would like. So at least it would set you apart, you know, if you're trying to sell a hamburger and french fries, and so is every other fast food place, you know, you kind of need to do something to get a little differentiator in there.
Yeah. And one of the other really cool things that I heard too, I don't know if you remember one of the retired Carolina Panthers players, Russell Okung. I think he took some of his $13 million salary in 2020, took like half of it in Bitcoin, right? And I think today it would be worth like $21 million if he didn't sell. But he has been a huge proponent of Bitcoin and trying to get the NFL to pay their players in Bitcoin, talk about how great it is. And of course, not much has happened. I think there's been one other guy maybe in the NFL that has taken their money in Bitcoin, one of the big receivers.
There's a receiver. Odell Beckham took a contract. And then also the running back that came out of Penn State, Saquon Barkley. Yeah. He also took, because he's been like friends with Jack Maller. So he took quite a bit of his contract in Bitcoin. And I can only imagine, I mean, even if you were taking quite a bit of it in the $60,000 Bitcoin range, you're up 50% on the portion that you took in Bitcoin. So you know, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah. Well, so anyways, he's creating this flag football league called Bitball, and all the players will be paid in Bitcoin. The fans will have an opportunity to own real stakes in the teams, I guess. And his goal is for these communities to build some real wealth. And he doesn't want any more middlemen taking their cuts or making backdoor deals. So the first game that he has scheduled is going to be at a Bitcoin conference in Abu Dhabi on December 10th. And it's apparently going to feature 24 professional football players. So we'll see what happens. If you have a ticket to the conference, you can go to the game for free. I'm not sure if they're going to broadcast it or what, but it'll be intriguing to see where this goes. And if it is successful, I mean, I know it's just flag football for now, but will other sports start to do their own version of this and gather attention as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think I read one of the, maybe he posted on Twitter or X, talking about basically he's done with NFL players getting hosed. You know, they pay 10 or 15% to their agent to negotiate a contract. You know, they pay a financial advisor this, they pay this, and you know, they just kind of get nickel and dimed, you know, to the point that they're playing football for however long they can play, but they're only receiving a fraction of their actual contract. And he's like, Bitcoin allows me to go negotiate my contract, and even if I'm not as good at it as someone else or an agent, I'm going to make that back up by not having to pay everybody to be my financial advisor and my agent and my all these other, you know, managers and things like that. And, you know, all you got to do is just buy Bitcoin and you're good. You know, again, if you're a financially responsible NFL player, which most of them aren't, and most of the NFL players are bankrupt, you know, 3 years after their final contract and all that. But if you could just, while you're playing, if you have a 4-year career, if you could just put 20% of your salary into Bitcoin, you know, you'd have a real shot at, you know, having money at the end of your career to transition into whatever your next move is, because, you know, a 4-year NFL career is pretty long and you'll be 26 when your when your career is over. So you got a lot of life left to live, and you know, it'd be nice to have some Bitcoin to fall back on, you know, as you figure out what your next move is. So, you know, I think having advocates like that in the NFL, and that'll spread to other sports. You know, I think there's already some soccer players that are into it and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just like MicroStrategy. It's just like El Salvador. You need a leader to kind of pave the way. Then you need 4 or 5 years to show that it works. And then more people will kind of fall in line.
Yeah. No, exciting stuff for sure. What else did I miss?
So So the one thing that I saw that I really like this week, and it ties into what we talked about last week when we were going through the new regime change, you know, going back to politics, that Scott Bessent was being kind of talked about as the Treasury Secretary. And then RFK Jr. was being talked about as kind of competing with him for that Treasury Secretary position. I'm sorry, Howard Lutnick was competing with him for the Treasury Secretary position. And there was a bit of like a back and forth argument on X where RFK Jr. was going to bat for Lutnick, saying that, you know, he would be a better candidate. And I'm like, they're fighting about which pro-Bitcoin person is better to be the Treasury Secretary. I'm like, this, you know, in a fight where I win either way is not something that I'm used to in Bitcoin. Normally, it's the Bitcoin way or the traditional way. And if the traditional way wins, then Bitcoin has to wait longer. And now it's like, well, you know, do you want the super pro-Bitcoin guy or just the pro-Bitcoin guy as the freaking Treasury Secretary? You know, it's not like Deputy Treasury Secretary. It's not assistant to the Treasury Secretary. It's, you know, it's the actual position. So I think, you know, I've always been like Bitcoin's kind of far out on the horizon. You know, you have to wait a long time. And it just feels like everything's being compressed and brought closer to today. So, you know, we do this call every week, and, you know, 8 more of these podcasts and we're going to be like knocking on the door of Trump being Trump's inauguration. So then things get really, you know, they'll either speed up like I think they will from January through March, or, you know, it'll be kind of a shell game. You know, we can't do this because of this, these regulations, or the Constitution doesn't allow this, or the, we can't do an executive order for that, or whatever. Or it's like, yep, day one for 200,000 Bitcoin is now the strategic Bitcoin stockpile, and we're going to do what we can do to buy more. And I mean, it could be a huge deal really quickly, or it could be a huge deal over a long period of time. But, you know, when two Bitcoiners are battling over the Treasury Secretary position, things are different now.
Yeah. No, I mean, excitement is not selling it properly, right? With what's happening right now. There's so much cool stuff going on. And it's one of those things that we got to hurry up and wait, right? I mean, it's, yeah, 2 months away before we start to see what is really going to happen. There's been a lot of talk, and I hope some of this really turns into what they said they're going to do. And I guess only time will tell at this point.
Yeah. And you know, it's politics. So if they can't do everything they said they were going to do, that's fine. If they do half of it, then it still spurs the game theory globally and everything starts moving. And then, you know, it's just good for Bitcoin and it speeds things up. And we kind of talked, man, you want to go back to when we talked about like the Bank of America had the multiplier for every dollar that comes into Bitcoin, it changes the market cap by $114. And, you know, that multiplier is different based on different parts of the bull and bear cycle. And, you know, a lot of it is just based on the shock, whether it's demand shock or supply shock, where a dollar coming in makes a bigger impact to the price of Bitcoin. If we do go into this and we have institutions buying, more corporations doing hundreds of millions or billions of dollars at a time, states and countries adding it to the reserves, then there's going to be a huge demand shock. And we all know about supply. Like we talked about, like, oh man, the supply on exchanges is dipping, but it's always been like 2 million Bitcoin available, which has always been an unbelievably large amount of Bitcoin. But if you have the United States passing a bill that says their target is 100 or 1 million Bitcoin, you know, over the next 4 years, well, you know, half of the Bitcoin available on exchanges is accounted for. It just hasn't been bought yet. So, you know, maybe we do actually see a real supply shock. I don't know that we've ever really seen one. I think in theory, there is a supply issue with Bitcoin. But until it actually happens, you know, that's why my $200,000 to $2 million Bitcoin prediction is like, it just totally depends on if you know that if the demand is really what it appears to be and the supply isn't there, then the price has to shoot up dramatically. And so, you know, there's just so many what ifs and what happens over what time period in order to determine the price. So I don't know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Without World War III really kicking off or an alien invasion, I don't see where, you know, Bitcoin plummets.
Well, I mean, if you look at last week alone, between the inflows into the ETFs and what MicroStrategy bought, those two combined acquired almost 8 months of the Bitcoin supply, the next 8 months. So that was going to be mined. That's insane. Yeah. It happened in 1 week. You get 8 months of supply pulling off the table and theoretically is not going to come back anytime soon. I know half of it with MicroStrategy is not coming back for sure. The ETFs, you're probably not going to see a ton of profit taking anytime soon. You might see a little, but it's not much at all. But if that continues to happen every couple of weeks with the way MicroStrategy is, then I mean, the supply shock is going to be insane here pretty soon.
Yeah, because you know, you got miners, you know, at $100,000 Bitcoin, you're looking at $45 million per day of poor selling, assuming the miners sell all the Bitcoin that they mine, which is not the case. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really just the Bitcoin available from the 20 million Bitcoin that has already been mined is a bigger factor. The newly mined Bitcoin is a small trickle into the existing, you know, pool of Bitcoin available. So, yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, as they wear through the 2 million Bitcoin available in on exchanges, you know, the amount of Bitcoin coming into the exchanges is not a lot. So, you know, I'd be surprised if we see the exchanges gain Bitcoin supply anytime soon. You know, we'll see. I couldn't be more excited to see where this thing goes. Like, I can think of so many reasons why the price goes up and goes up a lot. And man, there's just a couple things that could happen that would drive the price down. So, you know, Bitcoin's all about being patient and waiting and watching and paying attention and being excited when, you know, there's little cracks in the dam. And it just feels like there's enough cracks and, you know, the gigantic pool of liquidity is about to flow into Bitcoin. And the faster it tries to flow into Bitcoin, the faster the price shoots up. So I'll, you know, I'm watching, you know, it's not just the velocity of money. It's the acceleration of money and the jerk of money that matters as far as the price escalation. So if we can get that acceleration to accelerate, then price, you know, that's how you get to your, you know, seven figure Bitcoin in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. And I mean, you got companies like Marathon Digital, Marathon, that's mining the Bitcoin and raising $1 billion to buy more Bitcoin in addition to what they're already mining. Sailor has talked about he's planning to throw the 100K party on New Year's Eve at his house.
Yeah.
But I mean, the question now is, are we going to wait that long for it to happen? It could happen much sooner than that based on everybody wanting to acquire more and just the speed of all this happening. So it's going to be crazy. I'm excited to see what happens over the next week. Right? It's just, you never know what's going to happen now. There's just so much positive news coming out from a Bitcoin perspective that it's going to be an exciting week.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Marathon is the second biggest corporate holder of Bitcoin, and MicroStrategy's $51,000 Bitcoin purchase was double what they have in that single purchase. Is the largest single purchase of Bitcoin in the history of Bitcoin. And that alone was twice as much as Marathon holds. So, you know, MicroStrategy is not just out in the lead. They are dominate. I mean, their lead is insurmountable and nobody can catch them. So it's pretty fun to watch.
Yep. Well, awesome. As always, Hal, this has been exciting to talk about. Can't wait for next week to see what happens then.
Yeah, same here, man. Like every week's good news. Until I've proven otherwise, I'm looking forward to the next week.
Yep. Sounds good. See you.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into
most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.